know, it sounds like it could have been an episode of Law & Order SVU, but the story of Cheryl Crane that rocked Hollywood in 1958 was all too true. It wasn't ripped from the headlines, it was the headlines. Cheryl Crane is the daughter of Hollywood legend Lana Turner. And at age 14 in 1958, Cheryl Crane stabbed and killed her mother's abusive gangster boyfriend Johnny Stompanato during a domestic struggle. His death was later ruled a justifiable homicide. In 1988, Cheryl Crane wrote a book called Detour. And I met her and talked with her just a few weeks before the 30th anniversary of the incident that changed her life.
I'm very happy today, very happy. And I think that's one of the reasons I was able to look back from a position of happiness, looking back at the past. Go through it. It was like, let's for once go through the whole thing and then lay it to rest. There were so many misconceptions about what happened in 1958, the stabbing of Stompanato. People think that my mother did it and let me take the blame, which I've never understood, but that was one of the twists, the rumors that started.
It's easy to understand, though, how a rumor like that could get started, isn't it?
Well, I know that she offered to say, she said to the police, let me say I did it. I don't want my daughter involved. And they, of course, said, Lana, we're going to find out the truth anyway. Now, there was several people in the room when that statement was made. Maybe that's how it started. But they've certainly taken that idea and ran with it. I mean, it's been in movies, it's been in books. No one, even though my mother wrote her own book and said, this is what happened, no one had ever heard from my lips what happened. Well, what happened was the same thing story that was told at the time, same story my mother told. I did it. I will live with that. You know, you don't put it away forever. It remains with you. When you're responsible for the taking of someone's life, no matter what the circumstances, you know, justifiable or not, that never goes away. That's something you carry. You learn to live with it, but it's always part of your life.
As the 30th anniversary of that date approaches, did you have somewhere in your mind, now is a good time to come clean, as it were, or that has the wrong kind of... Now is the good time to tell my
side
of the story.
It's interesting. I didn't even realize the fact that the 30th anniversary was coming because, as you know, it takes a while to do a book. And I first started serious consideration of doing it about 4 years ago. So we were just over the 25th anniversary and not to the 30th.
Was there I guess what I'm getting at, was there a milestone? Was there something you said, my gosh, has it been 25 years?
No, what really started happening, and it went back to when Mother first published her book, it sort of brought the story back into the public eye again. And I started receiving phone calls from different reporters and wanting statements. And then a television program was done where they portrayed us in supposedly one of Hollywood's greatest mysteries. I don't know what the mystery was, but that was one of the three. And I was even reading a book where it said that I, unbeknownst to Lana, her daughter Cheryl, was having an affair with Stompanato. And I went, oh, really? You know? Now, that person wasn't even in around when this happened, you see. So, and it became like, this is ridiculous. I had been silent for so long. Plus, there was a lot of other things that happened to me in my life that nobody knew about. That one they knew, but all the other things that are in the book, no one knew.
Liz Smith, in this column, which I'm sure you've seen,
they
mailed it to me from last November, said that she was, quote, knocked for a loop by your revelations about Lex.
Yes, the child abuse.
How could something like that be, even, especially in Hollywood, I suppose I should say, how could that be hushed up for so long?
Well, remember that, again, we're talking 30-some years ago, And people are reluctant to speak about that today. In those days, I mean, you just, to admit that something like that happened in your family, it would have ruined my mother's career. It would have probably ruined my life. I mean, it was difficult enough living through what I lived through, but to have it made public knowledge would have been excruciating. And unfortunately, I believe that it's still today people are reluctant, and there's so much of it going on. I was shocked to find the statistics. Because as we started working on the book, doing research, you know, at first you feel like you're the only one. And since I never talked about it to anyone, nobody ever said, hey, my dear, it is rampant, you know. But it's shocking.
And you also experienced the pain that so many child abuse victims suffer, that when you finally told your mother, she wasn't sure whether to believe you or not.
Well, yes, and which, of course, is understandable. I mean, my God, that's a tough thing to believe is going on, particularly with your own husband. You know, I mean, it's your daughter, and then that is rough. And I found that the worst thing of all that happens to the child is the guilt that the child feels. And if that guilt isn't addressed somewhere along the line, I mean, it just remains inside you. And so I had that happen, and then Stompinato happened, and then that's when I took my detour, because I just became very rebellious. And I think I was acting out against the frustrations, the deep emotional anguish that I didn't know how to handle. Because I never talked to anybody about any of these things. The court sent me to a psychiatrist. But, you know, if you don't talk through the psychiatrist, he's just sitting there and you're sitting there, and it's a very expensive waste of time. And I wouldn't cooperate. I wouldn't talk. Because it went against everything I had been trained in growing up. You did not talk to outsiders about what went on in your family. And so it unfortunately, the help that was extended, I didn't make use of.
If people are surprised that you are sane and happy and alive, will people also be surprised that you are on good terms with your mother?
Oh, I hope they won't be surprised. You know, my mother was always a loving mother. She was a working mother. And consequently, she wasn't around that much. You know, it took a lot of work to be Lana Turner. It really did. A lot of time, a lot of hours. And I always adored her. But we were just, as many children more commonly today, had little time together. And she was the breadwinner for the family, supported my grandmother and myself. And that was very important to her.
Entire books have been written about what it's like to be the child of a star.
As compared to what?
A plumber, I suppose. I don't know. But I guess all childhoods have their ups and downs. But and you describe the ups and
yes.
Big ups and the big downs.
It was magical. It was sometimes like living in a movie, because you could wave a magic wand and there would be circuses and clowns and whole rodeos and... my goodness, you never knew what was going to appear, particularly the birthdays. You know, the star baby birthdays everybody's heard about. Oh, boy, yes, they took place, and more. And the privilege, the education, the luxuries, the travel. You know, all of those things that I appreciate now, you don't appreciate them as a child. You know, but once you grow up and look back, you think, wow, that was pretty neat.
Did you ever then, or do you now, feel spoiled?
I don't think I was ever spoiled. I was very sheltered, which made it difficult to make the transition to the realities of life, particularly when I ended up in juvenile hall. You know, that was a bit of a shocker for me.
People will read your book and they'll say, how can you be so happy now, having been through this?
Well, you know, it's to me, the only way I can explain it is that when I got off that detour, you know, and I went to work for my father, that was step number one. He offered me the chance to work in his restaurant business, which was so important to him. And suddenly it was like, well, wow, if he trusts me that much, I must have something pretty good going on. So I began to like myself a little better. Consequently, I treated myself better and started to gain confidence. And you know, that's, we all have to start from that point. If you don't like yourself, nothing else is going to fall into place at all. And I think that was the first time I really started liking myself. So that helped a lot.
I think some people will read your book. They'll start, as many of us do, on page one.
Well, some start at the back, you know.
I've learned not to do that. It's much
good
more interesting
you.
If you start from page one. But they'll get to the end, and they'll figure out in their own minds, mm-hmm. that the reason you're gay is because of what these men in your life did to you.
Well, I tried to answer that question, and I'm not an authority. I speak only for myself. I think that has nothing to do with it. I had two very bad experiences with men, Lex Barker, John Stampinato. I had many good experiences with men. I feel, speaking for myself, that I was always that way. I can remember as young as 6 years old having feelings that didn't change as I grew older. I think I was very lucky in the fact that my parents, when I first told them, I was about 12, I didn't know what to tell them. What I told them was, I came home, I said, "Oh, Mother, I'm in love." And she said, "Oh, darling, isn't that cute? What's his name?" And I said, it's not a he, it's a she. And she said, she kind of chuckled and said, "Oh, darling, you'll outgrow that, you know." Well, I didn't outgrow it. And I think my family, after all the detours I took and all the places I went, they were so happy to see me happy that it really was never an issue in our family. And that's where you usually learn that maybe something's right or wrong to your family first before the world. So since I had the support of my family, I never had a problem with it. And to answer back to the question about happiness, when you're happy, you can't be happy and bitter at the same time. You got to let go of one or the other, and I'm not about to let go of happy. So I finally put all that out of my life, all the past out of my life. Finally sat down and talked to my mother, which I had never done, about all the things that happened to us, how we felt about them. She's talked to me about her feelings, which I never knew. And my God, the misconceptions I had about my own mother, and she had about me, just because we never talked. So that's been wonderful for our relationship.
Cheryl Crane is 76 now. Her mother, Lana Turner, died in 1995 at the age of 74. I'm Bill Thompson, and now I've heard everything.